Lauren Frances Sharma, welcome to The Signal, and congratulations on your debut novel.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
This book paints such a vivid, immersive portrait of life in Trinidad, but I dare say listeners will hear in your voice you've got a distinctly American accent. Let me start by asking you to just tell the story of your own family background and your roots in Trinidad.
Yeah, my grandmother was an immigrant here. She came over in the late 1960s. My mother was brought over at 19. My father came over at 27, 28. And I was born here. So that explains why I do not have a very good Trini accent. We are from Baltimore, and I grew up in Northwood community.
Tell me how the story of this novel was born. What inspired you to put pen to paper?
Well, my grandmother, who lived in New York ever since she migrated here, she lived in New York City, and she had a stroke. When we went to Brooklyn to see her in the hospital, I sat next to her in the hospital bed and realized I had never asked this woman any questions about her life, about how she got here, about what was going on in Trinidad that made her want to leave. I knew a very little bit about her story. I knew that she was in a marriage that was unhappy, and she took the opportunity to come over here as a domestic, and I knew that she brought her children over within a very short number of years, making $50 a week as a domestic, as I said. So as I was sitting there, I realized that I really felt a loss. Almost immediately, she hadn't passed, but I just knew that I wasn't going to be able to ask her the questions that I wanted to. So my next trip to Trinidad happened to be not much longer after that first stroke, and we were in Blanchechez, which is the little fishing village that much of this book is set in. And I was on the beach, and I just sat in the sand, and I was thinking about my grandmother growing up in this place, a place that I really feel connected to and I really love quite a bit. And I just knew I had to write a story. I had to write that story.
Well, let's go ahead and take listeners inside this book, Till the Well Runs Dry. This is the story of a woman loosely based on what you understood of your grandmother. This is a protagonist poetically named Marcia Garcia. I'm not saying it right, am I?
Yeah, it's pretty good. Marcia Garcia is how we would say it.
Marcia Garcia.
Perfect.
So it's the story of this woman and her family in Trinidad. She's a teenage girl when we meet her at the beginning of the story. She's taking care of her siblings in the absence of her parents. And we end up really following her life for several decades once this narrative gets rolling. What kind of an overview can you give us about the arc of this story?
Yeah, you know, it spans 20 plus years. So as you said, we do meet her as a young girl, and she meets a young man, and we follow them through much of their life, through having children, through a very tumultuous family life. And we see love, we see motherhood, we see family dynamics at play. Obviously, immigration comes into play much later on. But it's quite an epic book, I think.
I wonder, Lauren, if you might read a bit from a point in the story when Marcia Garcia is the mother of several young children at this point, and their father, Farouk, he's a problematic dad, to say the least. He's kind of out of the picture at the moment. But this, I think, is a really nice passage, I think, because it paints this beautiful scene of a Trinidadian market and this young mom who's just out shopping with her kids.
Great. I was strolling through the carrot marketplace with the children, sniffing spicy cucumbers, groping bags of dried sorrel. The marketplace was not yet crowded. Mounds of fruits and vegetables in wooden crates were still firm, fresh, displaying a rainbow of crisp, bright colors. The sprigs of herbs and dry spices were fragrant. Sellers called out for me to be their first sale of the day while the children at my rear bargained prices with them. Patsy was 9. She was a pretty girl with new white teeth. Her body remained babyish, but her mind moved with haste. Always arguing with Farouk because she was so much like him, Patsy was a fast talker and cheeky. She was also a fighter, like a poison arrow throwing carob. The world wouldn't pounce on Patsy without her pouncing back. Jacqueline, born 2 years after Patsy and a year to the day after Farouk and I were married, looked like Farouk, walked like me, and behaved like no other child I knew. She was nosy, bright, the smartest in her class, loving, especially toward that father of hers, but also terribly shy. At times, she could hardly speak without withdrawing into herself. Wesley, our boy, was 5. He wasn't as sharp as the other two. He walked, spoke, and even drank slowly. I babied him because I felt he needed it. I realized, probably too late, that I might have done him a disservice. Whether we tired of one another or not, the four of us, together, made a family. I was always reminded of this fact while at the market on Saturday mornings. "Patsy, take Wesley and go buy some fresh ginger," I said. She held out her hand. She had recently begun filing her nails. They were square and buffed to a shine. "What happened to the change you got back from buying the breadfruit?" She and Wesley opened their mouths, revealing bright pink coconut shavings. "You spent all that money on sugar cake?" I wanted to be angry, but they were laughing too hard. "Eh, you better sell off them rotten teats inside them two big heads of yours and get me my ginger." I reached into my brassiere for another dollar. My business had grown, and Farouk was generous. My trips to the market were no longer filled with anguish. "Pick up a sugar cake for Jacqueline, but no more sweets for you two, all right?" Patsy and Wesley ran to the far side of the marketplace while Jacqueline and I continued to rummage through the okra and dashing bush, searching for the freshest of the bunch to add to the Sunday callaloo.
Lauren Frances Sharma, reading from her novel Till the Well Runs Dry. And Lauren, right after this passage, coincidentally, is the point in your story when Marcia Garcia, the young mom, encounters for the very first time this intense-looking, creepy old woman. She's got these scary blue eyes, and everyone calls her Tante Gertrude. Let me ask you to talk about who this character is and how she fits into the story.
Sure. Well, when Marcia meets Farouk, she is reserved. And she holds back when they first meet.
And just a reminder, Farouk is the young man, her young suitor, who's trying to win her heart.
Yes, exactly. And Farouk is a very impatient young man, and he takes it upon himself to go and visit this Obeah woman, Tante Gertrude, to see if she can help him speed Masia's love along.
Now, you use the word Obeah, O-B-E-A-H. Explain what that means.
Most Americans would think of it as voodoo. But in Trinidad, it would be called Obeah.
So Tante Gertrude is a practitioner of this sort of Afro-Caribbean shamanism. And she does end up helping Farouk out, sort of. Things get complicated, but what does she do for him?
Well, she gives him a brew to give to Masia, a little beautiful tea that Masia falls in love with. And Farouk gives it to her regularly. And she drinks it not knowing that this is helping her along with her love for Farouk.
An interesting element of the supernatural in this story. During your own time in Trinidad, Lauren, have you encountered women like Tante Gertrude? Is Obeah, this kind of shamanism, is this something that's like a substantial part of the fabric of life there?
I would say yes. I would say that I have not experienced it there, but as a child of immigrants to this country, I know that this practice exists here as well. Those things are brought along. And sure, there were people that I knew, adults when I was growing up, who would visit the Nobi woman. And many times it was for relationship issues.
This book, it covers so much of the depth and breadth of Trinidad's culture and history. There's politics, there's crime, it's covers things going on in the educational system. How much of this knowledge came to you through books, and how much of it has been sort of absorbed by osmosis along the way from your own firsthand experiences in this country and with your relatives?
I do think that a large part of it was by osmosis. I think that you, when you come to this country, you bring along a lot of important things about your culture, wherever you may be from. And when you're living in a house with people fresh here who are trying to live in both worlds, it's difficult not to carry all of that with you throughout the day. And as I started to write this book, I realized how much I had absorbed over the years. My parents were extremely helpful in the writing of this book. I asked them a million questions, and they came with me to every trip that I took there so they could walk me around places and just give me the color that I needed to give to this book. And I asked a lot of questions and read a lot of books as well, but so much of the structure was there because of what I already knew.
And how about your writing technique proper? I mean, for a debut novel, this story is kind of a masterful spiderweb of plot twists and these secrets and intrigue. I'd venture to guess you're like maybe a fan of mystery novels or thrillers. I mean, building this plot must have been delicate work.
Yes, it was. It was long and hard, and I have two small children. I had two very small children when I started it. And indeed, I do really like thrillers. Funny that you should say that. But in some respects, the characters started to live on their own and started to tell me kind of what I needed to do with this book. I started writing this book with the daughter, with Farouk and Masia's second oldest child, who is also a narrator in this book. I started the book with her voice, and I thought it was going to be her story. Before I knew it, her mother had taken over, and this book is so much about this mother and these children and the relationship that they have with her. And I thought I was taking it from a completely different angle when I started, but it turned into something completely different.
You mentioned this novel, of course, being inspired by a visit with your grandmother near the end of her life, an impulse to reconnect, in a sense, with your roots, understand your family better. I wonder if you ever think about how your grandmother would have liked this book if she'd had a chance to read it.
Yeah, I do. I think about that. The weird thing is that soon after she passed, I had a dream, and she came to me in that dream, and she told me how she felt. And I know that sounds odd and just really creepy, but it gave me a lot of peace.
In your dream, she approved?
She did. She did.
How about your parents and other family members? I mean, they kind of knew what you were up to. Did they? What kind of feedback did you get from them about this story and the place it depicts once it was done?
It was hard at first to get that that excitement from them. I'm an attorney, and I went to law school, and I think my parents expected that I would continue to practice, and I began staying home with my children, and I started writing this after I stayed home with them, and I think they thought that I was going to head back to the law very soon afterward, and here I am writing a book. So at the beginning stages, I think they were a little reserved, you know, but then I think they realized I was very excited about it, and my momentum was building. And then they were all on board in such an exciting way for me. You grow up with parents who are not from this country, the idea of writing is, it's a little scary for them. I think doctor, lawyer works a lot better than writer. So this was difficult, I'm sure, for them to accept at first, but they have been so supportive and they've been pleased. And my father has read this book almost as much as me, certainly more than even my editor, so which is great. And they really do like it.
So your departed grandmother aside, your parents and extended family aside, when you look at the mirror, and now that you've accomplished this book, are you pleased? Is it what you set out to accomplish? I mean, why did you write this book in the first place? And did you accomplish your mission?
Yes, you know, I am pleased. I really wanted to write an interesting book, a page-turner. But I also wanted to highlight this story of just a regular, normal person who gets an opportunity to come here to this country. And I think thinking about my own life and the fact that my grandmother came in the 1960s and I was the first generation here, and I'm an Ivy League grad and Wall Street lawyer, former Wall Street lawyer, I think that really made me think about how amazing it is to be a product of this country and to have had someone make the decision to come here and to give me the opportunity to have this life that I've had. And so a story about a regular girl who grew up in a small village and makes this a remarkable decision to leave her life. I just wanted to bring attention to that person who might clean houses or might be at the hospital cleaning out the bathroom. They've got stories. We've got stories.
Congratulations again on this, your debut novel. It's really, really been a pleasure.
Oh, thank you, Aaron. Thank you.
You can join Lauren Frances Sharma for the official launch of her book, Till the Well Runs Dry. It's going to be happening at the Ivy Bookshop on Falls Road in Baltimore on Monday evening, April 21st. And the details are online at our website, wypr.org/programs/signal. For The Signal, I'm Aaron Henkin.
You're listening to The Signal, an original production of Your Public Radio.